What's up, y'all? This is Zach with Living Corporate. And if you didn't know, Living Corporate is an experiences management company, y'all. What does that mean? That means we help organizations support their go-to-market strategy through building market trust, as well as their employee engagement strategy by building employee trust. And how do we do that? Well, we have data analytics and organizational assessments. We have our e-learning platform, and we have our media capabilities, our brand storytelling capabilities. What you're about to listen to is an incredible conversation we had with the executive leader at Capgemini. Capgemini is a global consulting firm shaping the entire world, organizational transformation, digital transformation, technical implementations, you name it, Capgemini does it. So excited and thankful for this campaign. Shout out to Janet Pope. Shout out to the executive leadership team. I'm excited for you getting into this discussion. Here we go. Cleveland Sellers, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having me. It's good to be on, especially today as we celebrate the Martin Luther King holiday. Really good to be on this platform and talking to you.
Hey, man, I'm honored by that. And absolutely, you know, it's never a dull day. You think about King's work. Speaking of, really kind of think about legacy. You know, I want to get started. First off, you graduated from Morehouse, and I feel like most brothers I meet who graduated from Morehouse, they want to let folks know they graduated from Morehouse. It's kind of a joke, tongue in cheek. I'm curious, though, what led you to select that university realm of higher education? And how has it informed how you engage, like, the world, specifically the world of work?
Yeah, so, you know, I think you're right. We are proud of Morehouse and our matriculation through the institution, not just because I have on the sweatshirt today, but we're very proud of what the collective and the higher institution provided us from different backgrounds and different walks of life. It's interesting when you ask how did I land there, how did I get there? It wasn't originally my plan. I thought I was going to go off and play basketball somewhere, some Power Five school or some big school, and it really didn't happen for me. So literally, my dad said, "You're going to apply to Morehouse," and I really hadn't been on any type of official visit. I think normally, if you're born in the Southeast, you kind of go through campus at some period in time from the historic perspective. But for me, it wasn't from a perspective of a potential student. And so I, long story short, I received an acceptance letter, and my first time really being on campus was that day my parents dropped me off. And again, one of the best decisions I made in my life. I was not very strong academically. Coming out of high school, my focus was athletics, very smart, but didn't apply what I had in that regard. So Morehouse academically was challenging and difficult, but what makes it so unique is the environment it provides young African American men. And so for me, that was being able to surround myself with like-minded individuals that look like me, that challenge each other in every aspect of life, and to be able to grow, to provide this environment where you can grow, you can develop, you can you know, challenge ideas and thought. But ultimately leave there a much stronger individual academically, socially, and really in every aspect with the main focus on community, on being able to give back to the community. Morehouse has proven to be one of the strongest academic institutions for African American men, was and still is. And you recognize that, which is, if I go back to the original comment, which is why we are so proud and excited to talk about Morehouse everywhere we go, because of the opportunity it afforded all of us that have walked through those hallowed halls.
And I love it. I love it. You know, Cleveland, you know, you talk about, you say your background in athletics. Now, like, what were you, just like an overall athlete? Was you a hooper, track? Like, what was
Yeah, all the above. So overall, right? So I was a basketball player, really good basketball program in a small country town in South Carolina, Denmark, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Very small high school, 1A, had about 300 students. My senior class was 64, but we were always ranked in top 10 in the country. So a really, really strong program. Also, because you only have 300 kids. I played football as well, wide receiver. And I was one of the top soccer players in the state, and probably in the East. So, you know, the thought was to go play basketball, end up going to Morehouse playing football, and played a little soccer my freshman year. So, I consider myself probably an overall athlete.
Respect. Yeah. Now, with basketball, you was like, he was like a
2-3. A 2-3.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. We had a really, for a small school, we had a really big team. So for me at 6-3, close to 6-4, you were a tweener, right? Between a shooting guard and a small forward. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I think our five may have been 6-8, 6-7. Really big squad for high school.
What was your favorite route that you ran? In football,
it had to be either a post or an out, right? Anything to get me away from contact, right? So I could.
Okay. You wasn't running, or you wouldn't run across the
middle. No, they would, but it was not my favorite route. I was known to have alligator arms if it was going across the middle. You learn very quick at that level. That you, at those skill positions, you take as little contact as possible. You learn that real quick.
Well, I mean, that was also like, I'm not calling you old. That was like a different era. Like, cats was coming down.
Well, it was no such thing as targeting, right? So,
right. It was just,
Man, it was, and you know, for defensive backs, right? It was nothing for you to be on the outside and get choked as you're trying to run your route, or, you know, your face mask pulled. It was a little more physical, I think, back then.
You know, it's interesting, right? Like, I think about the experiences we have coming up, and how they shape just how we navigate the world, right? You know, I think about looking at your profile, Cleveland. If I'm wrong, like, correct me, it's cool. Like, ain't nothing gonna happen, right? You've been an executive focused on go-to-market strategy and client customer experience for like almost 20 years. Like, talk to me about what initially led you into the go-to-market strategy space, what's keeping you here, and then like, what does your day actually look like?
Yeah. So it's a good question. It's loaded. So I haven't always been an executive, right? So, you know, I go back to my junior year of college, engaged to be married, realized very quickly I needed a job, coming right out of college. And so interviewed with IBM, and a number of other companies, but IBM was the one place and opportunity that proved to give a guy like me, who was an English major, right? You know, could always write very well, could communicate very well, and gave me an opportunity in this tech space. So I started IBM right out of college and back in the late 90s, in a place that they called the .com center. It was a group of us, maybe about 700, 800 go-to-market sellers, right out of college, being trained, shadowing, being mentored to become the future client executives or client partners within IBM. I spent about 7 years there, really just honing the craft and the skill, and received an opportunity to go out and take a portfolio for IBM, and the rest was history, right? Bounced around IBM a little bit, covered the state of South Carolina to a large fashion retailer to, you know, media and entertainment, you name it. But it was there that I realized the importance of relationships, the importance of focusing on detail, and really managing teams, all which are important. But I think the primary focus, something that I learned early on, and I know we'll talk more about this, is that there was revenue upside by having someone that looked like me in the company, in an account, and driving growth, right? There were doors that I was able to walk in that others weren't. And it wasn't just because of how I looked, but it was also because of the skills and what I possessed and what I gained. I carried that with me through every company and organization that I was in. And I spent some time at Salesforce, spent about 3.5 years at Teradata. And then 4 years ago, actually my anniversary is this month, 4 years ago, I joined Capgemini. And I joined Capgemini as a sales guy, right? As an executive seller. And again, because of those relationships and the acumen, was able in about 8 months to move into a sector leader role in business services. So in our outsourcing business, I started managing the sector. And then from the sector, I started what today we call the strategic deal team in business services. And, you know, less than 2 years later, was asked to run the service line for the business. But again, my success was really because of the experiences, the learnings over years, even going back to college, was over a long amount of time. And when you look at the arc of someone's career and how they got to where they are, usually what you find is that there's no direct line. Right, you usually take twists and turns, especially for my generation, and you end up in a place that you probably never guessed you would be. But you just continue to work hard, and a lot of times you don't open doors, right? But you have to kick them down.
You know, to your point, like I remember when. So I graduated from college in 2011. I graduated a year early. I graduated 2011.
Okay.
And I remember people were telling me, like, hey, a lot of y'all, the job that you're going to have in 10 years or 15 years hasn't even been invented yet.
Yeah. Right?
And I couldn't really, like, appreciate what that meant. But that resonates with me, right? Like, from where I started, HR manager at Target, then HR business partner at oil and gas, and then I pivoted into consulting, eventually getting to Capgemini, so salute. Then to another consulting firm, then another consulting firm, and then getting into industry and then doing my own thing now with Living Corporate full time. But like, it's interesting because I think if you like hold on too tightly to this vision of exactly what you want to do or what you want it to look like, you'll miss out on a lot, as opposed to just kind of like having a very clear set of principles and core values and frankly, like a purpose you want to serve. And then let that be your constant. And then as things come in and things shift and change, it might be uncomfortable. It's definitely going to be new, but it won't be like earth shattering. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree. I've got three kids, right? Zion is my oldest. She's 23, and I may get the ages wrong. Cleveland, the fourth, was 19. And Zoe is,
Dan Cleveland, how old are you, dog? What's going on? The what?
And Zoe is my youngest, 17, that we just dropped her off for her first semester in college. She started a semester early. All three play soccer, great athletes, but better students and people. But what I've learned over this journey is, you want to lead not just kids, but those that come to you for guidance to their passion, their purpose, right? What's your purpose? What's your individual vision? And that's what unlocks opportunities for you in the future.
And listen, respect and shout out to you with your three children. I have two children myself, Emery and Amon. Emery is going, she four turning 14
Yeah,
in May.
I
I
know
got
how that
Amon,
is.
who's you remember that was, right? And then I got Amon, she's about 15 months or so. She's solidly 15 months. But going back to you though, Cleveland, what's up, dog? Like, you look incredible. You must drink a lot of water. And I'm telling you something, for those, now we have the video experience, we have the audio experience. Look, I'm paying attention. Cleveland ain't got no Beijing in his hair. Like, you
No,
actually look
it's a real
incredible.
hairline. It's hanging on though. I mean from
You got that Paul George. It's
it's
nice.
hanging on there, but it comes from
Has it been, has
lot of
it?
water and BCAAs, man. It's guys that die.
Golly, you said your oldest daughter is how old? You said 20 what?
23. Yeah.
That's incredible, brother. Congratulations, man. Man, listen, that's dope. 'Cause I'm gonna tell you, man, I meet a lot of black executives. You know, I talk with Course, Living Corporate. We're always talking about employee experiences. So we talk to people from all types of backgrounds, typically historically marginalized backgrounds, and talk to a lot of these black and brown executives. And I mean, they look great. They also look like they've been through some
Yeah.
wars. Like, you don't look like what you've been through, I imagine. I mean, my goodness, we got to have a separate pod about your
Yeah.
skin regimen. You look phenomenal.
I think the key is having that partner with you that can offload some of that burden and stress. And my wife and I met early in college, probably I think our sophomore, end of freshman year, sophomore year. And when our friends were off at grad school, we were raising kids, right? We were raising babies and working and trying to
Awesome.
figure out the corporate world and a lot of responsibilities. And starting early, the positive is we're still young and our kids are adults, right?
See, okay, so that might be part of it too. So you started early. Okay. See, my wife, and see also, yo, you hey, yo, Cleveland is player. You see what he did? I said, Cleveland, you look great. He threw that
It's key. You always have to do
shot on.
it. Always have to do it.
Hey, I respect, man. This dude is player. Hey, yo, listen, I don't know. Shout out to the people at Capgemini. Y'all need to pay attention. If y'all not on this man mentorship tree, pay. I could tell off this interview alone. You mess around, go somewhere. Listen, it's funny because I remember Candace and I, we got married young. So I got married, I was 23, but we waited like 7, 8 years before we started, right? But it sounds like you got started earlier. So, like, I'm curious, kind of as a quick aside, like, what did that look like navigating these spaces you were talking about as a father,
Difficult.
right? Like, as a new father,
Difficult, right? And you have to be agile, right? You've got to be, because at that time, if I'm just transparent, coming out of undergrad, you're not making a lot of money. So you've got childcare, you've got work obligations, and again, we were in our circle of influence and peers, we were the only ones with young kids. So it's difficult. But again, I think is key for my wife and I, it was key that we aligned on goals and objectives for our future. What did we want 10, 20, 30 years? What did we want retirement to look like for us? And to stay focused on doing that. And again, it was difficult, but much easier with a partner, with someone that you can do it with, and go along this journey, right? Nothing you do is ever going to be easy, but is it worth it? Is a question that you have to ask. And for us, absolutely. I mean, again, I just dropped my youngest off 2 weeks ago for a first semester. So, you know, first week of being empty nesters and just enjoying being together.
That's a beautiful thing. And you're right, too, because, like, there's trade-offs with that in terms of, like, the front end is a little more challenging.
Yeah.
But then the back end, right, you're in your, you know, you're in your 40s. Or your early 50s, and you're able to chill. Now, it's not like these kids ever go away, but, you know, you open up the refrigerator, you don't see fruit snacks and cheese sticks all in the side of the dorm. So now I'm projecting. I'm talking. let's keep it going. Let's keep it going, man. You know, part of being a good client partner in terms of, like, I think about, like, this, like, just a sales executive is having Oh, I'm glad it's ain't live. See, I skipped because I really want to answer this other one. So one of the several hats you wear is that of an account manager and a liaison on behalf of Capgemini. Like, you're going out in the market and people see you as a representative of this larger global entity. I'm curious what that looks like for you to manage and nurture a bunch of different relationships. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's, you know, at this point in my career, it's natural, right? But I also lead our go-to-market team. So I think the first thing that I always instill and implement is culture, right? Mm-hmm. Before you get to the ability to be a client partner or good seller in the market, you've got to build a culture of, one, diversity, which to me is the overarching emphasis is around diversity of thought. Now, you can't get to diversity of thought without people from different backgrounds, from different walks of life, different genders. You can't get to diversity of thought without having people that are diverse. That's number one. The second part is building a culture of winning, right? I relate everything to sports analogies, and my team from all over, right, all over the world. But for me, it's about building championship teams and mindsets every year. And for you and those that will listen that have played sports, you know, it's very tough to do it one time. Mm. It's even harder to do it twice. And then when you talk about building this culture, which means you build this legacy of winning every time, every year, every play, right? Every engagement.
Right.
And winning looks different at different times, right? Now, what do I mean by that? You've got to be able to go out and understand number one, the core values of an organization. And for me at Capgemini was easy because their core values embody the values that I have personally. So it was easier to go and really immerse myself in those values, but also look for cultural people that have the culture fit to map to that. And then it's really about understanding the services, the set of services we offer, but more important, what they mean to our clients, right? You've got to be customer focused, customer centric, and how what we do impacts that client. What you realize is that what we provide isn't for everyone. So it's easy to say, yes, I can do it. But it's more valuable to say, you know what, this isn't really what we do very well.
Man, let's talk about it. I'm going to tell you, like, from my time in consulting and then also just like doing Living Corporate full time, because we were like an experiences management consultant firm, consultancy startup. So we do different things, but ultimately we have a very like defined suite of services and products. And like, it's tempting.
It is.
Right? if someone goes, hey, I got this budget, I got an RFP and it's $20 million, right? It's very tempting as like a sales executive, as a go-to-market partner to be like, say yes first, and then run behind the scenes and go, okay, let me figure out like these like three different teams to like Frankenstein something. And I'm not going to poo-poo that all the time, because depending on your culture and depending on, you know, your methodology and kind of what's going on, sometimes like really dope things can happen with that. But oftentimes, dope things don't happen. You don't deliver value in the ways that the client's really looking for. So it's like, hey, you might even win the account and get the business, but the relationship is damaged over
time.
Or you get the account, you win the business, and you don't deliver, and then it creates a reverberating effect across the account, and frankly, maybe even across that market, because everybody talks to everybody. Like, you're like, you know, it just, so it's, I that really resonates with me. I think it's very important to be, to have the courage and frankly, the integrity to say, hey, you asked me, man, Cleve, I'll give you a great example. Someone reached out to us and said, hey, can you do like some multi-day leadership like sessions, like coaching, where we like and you do like, you create this this was like 2 years ago, so like, can you, and it was a huge client, can you do like this, it's in-person facilitative leadership coaching? And I said, and they had a number out there, and at the time, like, it was a good number relative to like what we needed, operational cost, blah 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 blah. And at first I was like, yes, and then I was gonna go work with my mans and we were gonna create this. But it was like, you know what, I came back and I said, no, I have, here's some referrals, I have some go-to-market partners we have that we believe will be great, you know, potential fits for you, but we, like Living Corporate, are not going to be accountable to that, because that's not really our sweet spot, that's not where we really operate. It's easy to do that though when like the market is good, right, when interest levels are low, and when you know stuff ain't looking kind of funny outside. I'm curious how you honor that, like in these conditions, right, where everyone's fighting for like every penny. Like, what does that look like, and what is your gut check, and what is that, you know, how does that work for you?
So a couple things, right? I think the first goes back to the client's always at the center of what we do, how we think, and how we execute business. The second part of that is my relationships are usually personal as well, right? So my brand, my personal brand, is just as important as the corporate brand. That's important because I would never do anything to jeopardize my personal brand and in turn, the corporate brand. So it makes it easier to say no. Now it's also strategic, right? Because I think when the customer's at the center, you understand how they're measured, what's important to them as an individual, as an organization. And when you say no for very specific, honest reasons, they're more likely and open to understand, well, what do you provide, right? What is it? How can we partner? And it gives you an opportunity to go down a lane that's more comfortable, that suits how you can execute, and to impact what's important to them. That marriage is what go-to-market sales, it's what it's all about, right? It's that marriage between us executing at our very best and also delivering the value to help you drive your KPIs, Mr. Miss Customer, to the highest that we can deliver. So that marriage between, you know, that client relationship is critical. Not only with services, I think you have to go a step further, and you have to understand your organization's culture and core values. every customer doesn't allow or align to those core values. And you've got to take a hard look to say, do we really want to partner or enter into this agreement, this marriage together, if we don't even align with core values, right? And that's a harder one, right? Because there could be some gray areas, but I think that's important in being able to execute and for us to get the most out of the client relationship, but also for the client to get the most out of our partnership. My team just won a project last year with a large company, and we were competing against some of our peers that are well established in the market. And after we won, I remember sitting down with our client sponsor, and I said, "Why did you award us the business?" And she simply said, "Because I trusted your team. I knew you didn't necessarily have all the experience and you know, but I trusted who you put in front of me to not only sell it, but deliver quality work." And she went a step further. She said, "You know, I also believe that there are going to be bumps in the road, but with this relationship and partnership that we developed, they'll be here for me when we hit those bumps." That only comes from value alignment. It only comes from, you know, having diversity at the table, and making sure that what we provide in terms of services really can deliver the quality that the client is expecting, which to me is vital.
You know, like something else you're speaking to, which is like, it's reminding me that a lot of times, I think like SaaS and professional services, and certainly professional services that use SaaS, like can get caught up in is landing this, like closing the sale. But remembering that there's client success that has to happen after that, right? So it's like, what is delivery, sustainability, and footprint expansion look like? And are things aligned in a way to facilitate those things? Because if you're, again, like if it's like, yo, like, hey, yep, okay, cool, we got this money, or hey, yep, we got an agreement for a net 60, or paired against different milestones, whatever the case is, and you're putting that in your sales force that you achieve, but it's like, okay, these are still human beings, these are still like relationships you're dealing with that you're having to nurture and manage to even get paid. Like let's just, like, even want to be, we want to be pessimistic, like, so that they're not doing some type of clawback, or you're not ending up in Washington Post or something getting exposed, or they're not writing something crazy about you online. Hey, like, we actually staff to make sure that they're successful in this delivery. So much there that resonates with me around what it really means to like this, the end-to-end relationship. Again, it's not, I think a lot of times, a lot of brands, even really, really big ones, it's almost like their journey really stops as soon as that SOW is signed.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, early in my career, I got kind of pinned in this area, and I'll characterize it as the turnaround guy, right? And what that means is any bad engagement, any project that was going sideways, you know, 1-800 call Cleve, right? It was get Cleveland in here. What I realized in doing this over a couple of years, had these engagements we should have never been in, right? Now we resolved it and we got it back on track and we developed skills that we didn't have and capabilities, and we were successful, but that decision criteria up front, being honest and having the ability, the courage to say, this probably isn't right for us, is critical, right? And so in my early years, that was something that I learned, and once I joined Capgemini, was able to really be in a position where I can build an organization that carries those values, that has that understanding, that understands the client, the power of diversity, and really drive a thriving business.
You know, you said it a few times here. We're going to get to it. Before we talk about the D word, I want to talk a little bit more about being that effective partner. I would imagine, at least for Living Corporate, and this is my experience before this in corporate America, part of being a good partner is having data-driven insights to help guide your clients and or prospective clients. In terms of kind of just where they need to be going, I'd love to talk about what does it look like? What does your world look like from a data perspective in terms of like, what are some of the key data points you're looking for in the market or as you're engaging prospective clients to help drive insight in terms of how, like, you know, what you're recommending to deliver and just how you're relating back to your
Yeah, and
customer base.
data's key, right? In the outsourcing business, which is where I am today, data is critical. It's the lifeblood of every organization, but also in what we deliver to our clients. And the word you'll continue to hear is transformation. How do we not only labor arbitrage was more of the 1990s, right? As we look forward, it's all about how do we transform business process? And the only way you do that is through a technology-led lens that helps you build data insights. But it goes a step further. Not only you don't want just the insights, but you've got to understand what are the next best actions for those insights that you derive, and then how do you execute against those actions, right? So we're a couple steps forward in our business, but it's all surrounding data insights, data intelligence, and right now the buzzword being Gen AI. How do we leverage Gen AI even in my world and in business processes? So look, I think the landscape over the next 6 to 8 months is going to change drastically. We've invested, we being Capgemini has invested a lot around data and Gen AI. And I think it will help us holistically to again, not only grow the business, but to really help our clients impact their business. And at the end of the day, provide a better world for your kids, right? For my kids that are growing up, how will they bank, in the next 5 years will looks totally different from the way we bank today. How will they consume, the next Amazon, right? What is that next platform going to look like? You look at how we consume everything from an entertainment business, from music to movies. How do we fly? How do we travel today? Everything looks different, and it looks different because everything is centered around your customer's customer, right? How do they service their customers? And for us, being able to provide data insights, transformation, the actionable execution is critical. And again, I think we'll see an acceleration of that over the next 6 to 8 months.
You know, you talked a little bit about generative AI already, so I'm gonna ask this really quick, and we're gonna keep it going. How much is generative AI, just AI more broadly, how much is that dominating the conversations you're having with your clients right
It's
now?
major, right? I probably met with over 150 CEOs, CFOs this year, or in 23.
Wow.
And it is a hot topic in every conversation. Everyone wants to explore opportunities for it to give them a competitive advantage in the market, how to help reduce cost. And drive those different insights. And again, to help service their employees and also service their customers. So it's a hot topic. I do think we're still in a crawl, walk, run. We're probably between the crawl and the walk. But look, there are clients in the market that are leveraging Gen AI. I think one of the first areas you'll see heavy usage is in the contact call center space, where there are some direct applications and some things that make life easy. If you look at, again, I go back to my kids, they don't want to talk to anybody, right? They'd rather go on their phones, get an answer. My son is a junior at Notre Dame, soccer player. Give a quick plug to the Notre Dame men's soccer team, just competed in the NCAA national championship last year.
Let's go.
Unfortunately, lost against Clemson, but still a great program. My son came home and he, while he was home, wanted to watch a movie on one of the apps. I can't even remember what it was. And he subscribed, but only wanted to subscribe for, while he was home. So he paid for a couple months and he said, "But Dad, I can't cancel it. I don't know how to cancel the subscription." My response was go online, call support, tell them what you want to do, walk them through it. My wife helped him. But he didn't want to do that, right? He wanted to go on his phone, on an app, hit a button, and it's done, right? How do you do the, ChatGPT, how do I cancel my subscriptions? But they want everything at their fingertips, and as a consumer. So as a client, we've got to make it easier for our customers to be able to do some of the things, or to consume products and services. And as a supplier, I've got to help. I have a responsibility to help my clients in a sustainable way drive those transformation ideas to innovate their organizations.
You talked a little bit earlier about, I know to your point about your conversation with CFOs, and this is not me saying that you said, this is me inferring and also doing a little bit of hypothesizing about, I think a lot of these CFOs right now, they are thinking through and asking themselves, how can they cut costs and also reduce headcount? There's a narrative, all these overwhelming narratives of overhiring in 2023, overhiring in 2022, and trying to do some market corrections, especially again in light of just like these market factors. I mean, there's been a lot of constriction in the market with all the economic uncertainty, and an effort to protect shareholders' interest and bottom lines and shore up for the future. A lot of these leaders, these organizations, have been laying off a ton of talent. Like, actually, it's wild. I mean, we see layoffs at the top of the year often. We see layoffs in Q4 and Q1, a little bit more publicized, and I think a little bit more like dramatic over the past couple of years. And then we're also seeing, I think, like in coordination with these layoffs, we're seeing people using the internet in a different way and telling their stories about their layoff experience in a different way. So I'm sure that that also magnifies the moment more. But I'd still love to hear your perspective on the impact of like massive layoffs and how, and what and their and how it impacts delivering a quality customer experience.
I think the two aren't mutually exclusive, right? Meaning that you can still have you can still solve cost-cutting challenges and still drive user experience at the same time. Now, look, I'm in the outsourcing business, right? So I may actually impact some of those. I think what you have to really understand and get to the heart to is what are they really trying to do? Right. And a lot of times when you get to the heart of what clients are trying to do, it's all about increased efficiency, productivity. How do we, and it's not always layoffs, right? So There may be organizations that that change based on the changing market, right? What we saw in COVID is that businesses have to become, you know, not recession proof, but, you know, they have to guard themselves for the blowing winds, whether it be a COVID epidemic or a financial crisis. How do we still survive and drive healthy business, but also deliver for our clients in the same type of market? And that comes through evaluating your business processes, technology, product development. And so, you know, unfortunately for people that find themselves in layoff situations, that it could be a combination of some of those efforts. So two things. I think the market will continue to ebb and flow. Companies will continue to reinvent themselves as employees and as leaders in the market. You have to constantly sharpen your skills, right? We just talked about this. For me, where I am today was not a straight line from leaving college, but it took many changes and, you know, educating myself in artificial intelligence, learning an industry very well, becoming an industry expert. And so I think as employees, we always have to be prepared for the change in the market, right? To reinvent ourselves. Most companies, you know, you're an HR, you have an HR background. Upskilling is critical. So an employee that has the skills to do one job, but also can pivot and shift into another area and execute and provide value is extremely valuable. So as employees, we have to know that and be able to maneuver with the changing tides. Because what we've seen, what we do know, is that business strategy, you know, in the early 2000s, usually looked 10, 20 years out. People were on this long track. Strategy now is for six to 12 months, right?
Right.
Which means what you do today will evolve tomorrow. And if you have that mindset, you're always valuable to an organization. Always use the word reinvent yourself, right? Never, you know, my parents always taught us to never stop learning, right? Always continue to grow, read, get certified, go out and challenge yourself, because the market will continue. One thing you can't change is the market dynamics. What you can impact is where you fit in the market and how you develop yourself as a business professional.
Yeah, I mean, no, 100% agreed there. I think what I'm hoping, and it's interesting, I've like referenced this discussion a few different times, Cleveland. I'm gonna reference it again. Some time ago, we had on Danny Guillory, who's the head of people at Glassdoor. We talked about the role of AI, generative AI, and also just AI as a broader function, and its ability to, and its impact to employee experience, right? And so often for me, I think about, yep, of course you can use AI to help like absorb different tasks or current roles. The value though, when I think about like growth and transformation and not just kind of like swapping a person for a machine, which I recognize is like low hanging fruit, it's transactional, like it's something you can do. Frankly, it's something you can sell very easily to brands. Mm-hmm. But the larger, I think the more complex sell, but really like the more valuable one over time, is selling AI as a employee enrichment tool, or employment experience enrichment. So, hey, we used to have this role that was just about doing this very transactional thing, moving this widget from here to here, or creating this very, frankly, like repeatable content from this to that, over and over and over. We can now absorb that task, but we don't necessarily have to eliminate this cost of this headcount. We can now take this headcount and move it into this transformative role over
That's
here
right.
to help us grow in this space, right? And so, like, that's where I think I'm probably being like super optimistic. Like, I'm not gonna like lean all the way into my naivete, but like, that's where I'm hoping that some of the more like the leading brands, or maybe even not the leading brands, maybe just some of like the Davids in this market of Goliaths choose to go, right? It's like, hey, as opposed to eliminating your whole department, maybe you reduce it by X percent, and like the people that you that in another world maybe got laid off were then moved into this thing where we're making a moonshot in this area. So to create more like a more like a richer customer experience, whatever the case may be, right? Like I'm hoping that can be a part of this larger vision of AI, and I'm hoping that like those who actually turn the king's neck, as it were, are helping the market to see.
And we're seeing it. We're seeing it today, right? Again, that's why I kind of leaned in on the importance of upskilling, right? Because you've got to be in a position to take on that next role of transformation, understand what transformation means to your department, your organization or company. But we're absolutely seeing, the upskilling and movement of people, not just resourcing or laying off, right? But how do we leverage the skill sets and as a business owner, the investment I've made, right? How do I leverage the investment I've made over the last year, 2-3 years, and get the most out of that investment, but also ensure that individual, that person, has an opportunity to continue to grow. One of the things, just highlighting Capgemini, one of the things that we really focus on, and I think we do a really good job, is that upskilling, right? How do we continuous training, continuous development of people? You know, one of the values in Capgemini is this entrepreneurial mindset, right? Which I relate to very well. But how do you take that mindset and help people to continue to grow and develop the skills necessary to be relevant in the market? And look, your job may go away, right? But it doesn't mean that you don't have the skill sets and the ability to add value.
You know, come back to that D word. You've mentioned like the importance and the value of diversity a few different times in our conversation. You know, we think about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and of course, it's been coming under massive scrutiny. It's the new Marxist buzzword that is just having folks all in a tizzy. But ultimately, when you think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I mean, ultimately, it comes into like employee experience. Like, everyone should come to work and feel like they're having a fair experience. They should feel as if they are welcomed to be there. They should have an enriching experience. Employee experience is important, right? I'm curious to hear your thoughts in terms of how employee experience does connect, if in any way, to delivering a valuable customer experience.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand, right? You can't deliver that valued experience without a team of people that feel valued, right? In your organization or in the supplier's organization that you're partnered with, right? And I think, when I look across our business, one of the most important assets that I have isn't Gen AI or, one of the top engineering programs in the world. It's our people. Right. Mm-hmm. So my ability to be able to help individuals and people grow, develop, mature. We use a tagline called get the career you want. Right. Mm-hmm. So how do you help them fit into the career or the vision, that personal vision that they have, is important, because at the end of the day, it helps drive that customer experience and customer success. We've all, been in lines, whether it's, at the airport and you go through security or you go try to get your driver's license renewed or a new one, and you have that experience and you're thinking, what in the world is going on in that person's
Behind
life
there. Yeah.
to make them not want to provide a service to just a random, they don't even know me, right?
Right.
And it's and oftentimes we have to go back to, well, internally, are they getting that experience that you just referenced, right, in their organization, to be able to provide, whether it's a smile, whether it's execution, whether it's delivering on KPIs. Happy people drive, I think, happy or good results. And so I think that experience for me internally is key, right? Ensuring that and look, I'm not gonna agree with my team all the time. They're not gonna like the decisions that I make all the time. But what we've been able to create in this culture is this culture of respect and winning, right? Nick Saban didn't win the championships that he won because everybody agreed with his decisions or play calling, but they agree with him because he was a winner. They followed him because he was a winner. And you create that culture. And at the end of the day, people know that you care about the business, but you also care about them as individuals. And so when you think about how do you drive that ultimate customer experience for a client, it starts in-house, right? It starts with the people that go to work every day. I was just in Kolkata, India, last week. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to go around and shake everybody's hand on the floor and tell them how much I appreciated them for the work that they do. Right? To me, that was important. Number one, because I don't get to go that often. But two, because that personal interaction, letting them know that I care about, I recognize what they're doing, I recognize how hard they're working, and just my dad used to say the most important two words in the English vocabulary is thank you, right? And just really thanking them for what they do for us on a day-to-day basis. All of that is important in how we manage our customer experience and deliver a quality product.
Cleveland, man, this has been a fire conversation. Frankly, I mean, I think we can keep on going, but I told you I'm gonna respect your time. Man, look, we consider you a friend of the show. Thank you for coming on. You're welcome back anytime. We got to definitely talk about skincare routine,
I'm ready, man. We
airline
could do
maintenance.
another one for sure.
All right, brother, take
Thank
care.
you. Thank
Thank
you
you.
for having me.
All
All
right,
right.
now, peace. All right, y'all, that does it for us today at Living Corporate. Thank you so much for checking out the pod. Make sure you click the links in the show notes to learn more about Capgemini and all the incredible work they're doing all around the world. Very excited. See y'all next time. Till then, peace.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.